Today we're in Revelation 17 and 18. Last 2 weeks we've been looking at the future activity of Satan, which covers Revelation 12, Revelation 13. The woman in Revelation 12, of course, is Israel, the nation Israel. And today we're going to be looking at Revelation 17 and 18, which is the woman and the beast. And the woman here is totally unlike the woman in Revelation 12. This woman is represents the dragon's apostate religion and is the dragon's harlot queen and is the dragon's great city. And, of course, when we look at Revelation 12, 13, and 17, that's a composite that shows us and tells us that the goal of the Antichrist is one government, one religion, and one economic system for the whole world. And we will see as we move along that he never really achieves this goal, nor is he meant to do so. And the Lord is steering him all the while to his own goal, which is one government, one religion, and one economic system under his king, who is Jesus Christ. And we begin to see world events shaping up toward this, especially as we've seen since 1948 the nation Israel come to be a nation. That's probably one of the greatest signs that we're near the end, is that fact in itself. But certainly as things come together, we should be motivated to redeem our time and tell people about Jesus Christ and the salvation they can have in him before the rapture of the church. Because once Jesus Christ comes for his church, the age of grace is over. The tribulation will begin, and it will be a much more difficult time. But after the rapture of the church, there will not be any believers in the world. And now that's only lasts for a short time, because in the confusion of millions of people disappearing, the Antichrist will come to power. And it's not that he takes power, it's but he comes to the fore and he makes a pact with Israel to allow them to build their temple. And simultaneously then, God is going to raise up two witnesses. And these two witnesses come in the power of Elijah and Moses. And they will minister in Jerusalem during the first 3.5 years of the tribulation. And so now Israel is protected because the Antichrist, beast from the sea, has made a covenant with the Jewish Levitical system and with the nation of Israel. So Israel is protected. And the Antichrist is, at this point, simply the head of the Western nations. We're going to look at some of the things that occur in Revelation 17 and 18 that begin actually at the beginning of the tribulation. Now, this picture depicts what is called the woman and the beast, and this is an image that sits out in front of the EU building in Brussels, Belgium. And this is a demigod named Europa, a goddess, Europa, riding a beast, and the beast is Zeus. And in mythology, Zeus is known as one who would marry other goddesses. In the mythology of Zeus, he finds Europa, who he's smitten with because of her beauty. He kidnaps her after he takes the form of a white bull. And he carries her off to Crete. And he has, according to mythology, has children by her. She is the goddess of Europe. Now, to give you an idea how prevalent her name is, in Greece, the 2-euro coin has the name Europa on it, and it shows the woman riding the beast, as you see here in the picture. Greece is also interesting because they have another 2-euro coin, which on its back has the word Syntyche tes Romes 50 chronia, and that means Treaty of Rome 50 years, and this coin is to celebrate that. That's a celebration of Greek democracy. Now let's go to the next slide. What we see here is the non-sequential progression of the book of Revelation between Revelation 12, 13, and 17. And I call this non-sequential progression because the book of Revelation is not in the order we would like it to be in. And I want you to look at this beast. This beast is kind of a depiction of the beast of Revelation chapter 12. It has 7 heads, and on its heads are 7 crowns. And this beast also has 10 horns. The problem is, these horns are in the wrong place. Now, if you read Revelation 12, in 12:3, it says, "Then another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his head were 7 diadems, or 7 crowns." Now, which of the heads has the 10 horns? The horns are not on the tail of the beast. These 10 horns are on one of the heads. And we know from Daniel 2, the kingdom of Rome ends, after some degradation into iron and clay, ends with 10 toes. And Revelation 2 tells us clearly that these 10 toes are 10 kings. In 7, the fourth beast, which is the Roman beast, has 10 horns on its head. And we're told in Daniel chapter 7, 10 horns are 10 kings. So actually, these 10 horns that are depicted on the tail of this beast should actually be up on the 7th head and not on the tail. But I want you to notice that, the heads actually has a crown on each of the heads. Now, why is that? Why are the crowns on the heads? And we come to Revelation 13, and we see that a dragon stood on the sand of the seashore. Then I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horns were diadems, and on his heads were 7 blasphemous names. Now notice there are crowns on the horns and not on the heads. Why is that? Well, because the other heads with crowns on them in Revelation 12, from John's perspective now in Revelation 13, are past kingdoms. And the revived Rome head has on it the 10 kings, and those 10 kings have 10 crowns. Because Revelation 13 is depicting the beast coming up and coming up to rule in the middle of the tribulation. The Antichrist is going to declare himself to be the ruler from this point on. So, and he's going to be ruling in conjunction with these 10 other kings. And so they're wearing their 10 crowns. And so here you have the picture of the beast coming up out of the sea, who is now going to rule on the seventh head with the 10 horns having the crowns. We're in Revelation 12. The 7 heads have the crowns because it's the 7 kingdoms that persecuted Israel were being depicted. Now, what were these 7 kingdoms? Just to review, we talked about this before. The 7 kingdoms actually began with Egypt, the second one being Assyria, the third one being Babylon, and this is when the times of the Gentiles begins, is with Babylon, and these are the only kingdoms that Daniel describes. Babylon, then Medo-Persia, then Greece, then Rome. And of course, Rome becomes the revived Roman Empire, that is the 10 toes of Daniel's image in chapter 2, or the 10 horns of the beast in chapter 7. So you can see Daniel must be the foundation for interpretation here, because John is using the same figures that were used back in Daniel, and Daniel really is the defining prophecy to help us understand the book of Revelation. So now we leave chapters 12 and 13, we come to chapter 17, and that's not in sequence in time, though it comes later in the book. It carries us back to the beginning of the tribulation. In Revelation 17:3, John says that he, that is an angel, carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast. Notice the scarlet beast, that's the red of the dragon in chapter 12, and the beast of Revelation 13. He brings these two together now as a scarlet beast full of blasphemous names, having 7 heads and 10 horns. Notice there's no crowns at all. Now, why is this? Because the woman is sitting on the beast. The woman actually is in control at this point. The beast is simply using her to come to power in the first 3.5 years. When we come to Revelation 17:12, there's a point at which the woman is no longer in charge, because it says the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings. Here, John, in the book of Revelation, chapter 17, defines these 10 horns just like Daniel did. These are 10 kings which have not yet received a kingdom. But when they receive authority as kings, but they will receive authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour, for a short time. Why just a short time? Because they're going to give their authority over to the beast. And he is at that point then, at the time they come to power, going to do a couple things. They're going to get rid of this woman who's riding the beast. They're going to get rid of sacrifice and grain offering in the temple. And the Antichrist is going to proclaim himself as God, so there's no longer any need for any other religion during this time. Now, as we move on, we come to the next section, the woman and the beast, Revelation 17 and 18. The next slide, we're going to find out, who is this woman? How's John going to define her? She's defined as the great harlot in 17, 1 through 6. And let's read that, 17, 1 through 6. And one of the 7 angels who had the 7 bowls came and spoke with me, saying, come here, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality, and those who dwell on the earth were made drunk with the wine of her immorality. And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast full of blasphemous names, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And the woman was clothed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a gold cup full of abominations and of the unclean things of immorality. And upon her forehead a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered greatly. So John is amazed by what he sees. He's awestruck. And as he sees this woman riding this beast, he's awestruck by the power that she has, and by the fact that the kings of the earth are actually falling at her feet, and they are actually worshiping her beauty and the wealth that she possesses. Now, this woman is a depiction of the great harlot, meaning that she's the mother of harlots, the fountainhead, the beginning of all harlotry, all idolatry, all false religion. So this is depicting religious Babylon in all forms of religion. This is non-Christian as well as Christian religions. In 1718, the woman is the great city, and that city is Babylon, and that's economic Babylon. It's all types of economics, capitalism, socialism, communism, everything. Everything has come together, and this system has its headquarters in the city of Babylon. How is Babylon going to come to be in the future? I don't know, any more than I can tell you exactly how the temple in Jerusalem is going to come to be. But it will happen, because God's prophesied that it will happen. So all of these things will come together. And so this system will have its headquarters in Babylon on the Euphrates River during the tribulation. And what's at the root of this system is self-interest. And we've always lived in this system. We're immersed in it. But God warns us not to adopt the philosophy that drives it, which is self and selfishness, self-aggrandizement. We're to be living in subjection as servants of Jesus Christ. But this system has become so much a part of our lives that it's hard for us to imagine life without the religions of the world, and without the commerce that we interact with every day, the music, the movies, and even the business community. We're part of it. And yet God tells us not to live for it. So when we talk about the center of all false religion, we have to look at 17:2, because that's really what that depicts. The kings of the earth commit acts of immorality with her. They actually worship at her feet. 17:3, he carried me away in the spirit into wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast full of blasphemous names. These are names of blaspheme against the very word of God. Now if you look at Revelation 2:20, we saw a church back there, Thyatira, which really had the same thing going on. Some of the same wording is used there. In 2:20, you have the church of Thyatira, and Jesus says this to the church of Thyatira as he's telling John to write letters to these seven churches in Revelation 2 and 3. He says, "But I have this against you, that you tolerate the woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess, and she teaches and leads my bondservants astray, so that they commit acts of immorality and eat things sacrificed to idols." Notice immorality and idolatry always go together. It goes on to verse 21 and says, "I gave her time to repent, and she does not want to repent of her immorality. Behold, I will cast her upon a bed of sickness, and those who commit adultery with her into great tribulation, unless they repent of her deeds." So there's a warning there, prophetically, that this church is going to be cast into great tribulation. And now here we are in great tribulation. And there's a woman, just like the woman described in the church of Thyatira, one who leads people into idolatry and immorality. Look over across the page at Revelation 2:13-15. And this is about the church at Pergamum, where Jesus says, "I know where you dwell, where Satan's throne is. You hold fast to my name. You do not deny my faith, even in the days of Antipas, my witness, my faithful one, who was killed among you, where Satan dwells. But I have a few things against you, because you have there some who hold the teaching of Balaam, who keep teaching Balak to put a stumbling block before the sins of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit acts of immorality." So there are some there holding to the teachings of Balaam, and like Balaam taught Balak, if I get the children of Israel to worship the gods of Moab and become enamored with the women of Moab, they will commit immorality, and that's exactly what happens. Verse 15, he says, "Thus you also have some who in the same way hold the teaching of the Nicolaitans." And the Nicolaitans were those who were leading people into false religion, which then therefore led them into immorality. So here you have two churches. Jesus commends both of these churches on one side, but on the other side, they're actually living in the midst of immorality in the church. As these seven churches look at the entire church age as kind of a composite, it tells us that in our churches around the world, we are going to have people that are going to be in our churches who are unbelievers, who are leading people into false religion and into immorality. And so you're going to have a blend of believers and unbelievers throughout the church age and in the churches. And what's going to happen at the rapture? Well, God is going to remove the believers and leave the unbelievers behind. And so he talked about the separation of the wheat and the tares at the end of the age in Matthew 13. In a sense, he's removing the wheat from the churches and leaving the tares behind. And that's when the tribulation begins. So when the tribulation begins, there's only unbelievers. Now, as we look at again at the city of Babylon, it's not only the center of all false religion, it's the center of all world commerce. And we see that as we look at Revelation 18. So if you flip back there, see that in verse 3, where it says, all the nations have drunk of the wine of the passion of her immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed acts of immorality with her. The merchants of the earth have become rich by the wealth of her sensuality. The same idea that we read over in chapter 17. And so the merchants of the earth have become rich by her wealth and by her luxury. They're enamored with it. They worship at her feet. Look at verses 9 through 11. The kings of the earth who committed acts of immorality and lived sensuously or luxuriously with her will weep and lament over her when they see the smoke of her burning. And standing in a distance because of the fear of torment, they're saying, whoa, whoa, the great city. Who's the great city? Babylon, the strong city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come. The merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her because no one buys her cargoes anymore. She's being destroyed. You can think of the companies like Intel and Apple and Mobil and Exxon and all the great companies of the world mourning that the center of commerce is being destroyed. And we also have over in verse 15 and 16, we have the same idea. Look at verse 16. Whoa, whoa, the great city, she who was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and precious stones and pearls, has been laid waste, it says in verse 17. And down in verse 21, it says, a strong angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, thus will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence. So this great city, the center of worldly commerce, the center of all false religion, will be destroyed. So as we move on then and go to the next slide, we find that the beginning of Babylon was actually way back in Genesis. And so we're going to look at Genesis 11, 1 through 9. Up on the screen, I have the kind of a summarized version of 1 through 9. But in verse 1 of chapter 9 of Genesis, it says, the whole earth used the same language and the same words. As they journeyed east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. Now, the land of Shinar is the land of Babylon, also called Chaldea. It's along the Tigris-Euphrates River. This is where people settled. And they said to one another, that is, these people under a leader said to one another, come, let us make bricks. And they used brick for stone, and they used tar for mortar. They said, come, let us build for ourselves a city. This would be a place of commerce and a tower whose top goes into heaven. So this is not only going to be a center of commerce, but a center of religion. And they say, let us make for ourselves a name. Now that's a name, one name. That's a sense of oneness there. Or we will be scattered abroad over the earth. They were looking to maintain unity, build around a commercial, religious center, so they could make for themselves a name and maintain the unity that they strive for. Because they don't want to be scattered. But look at this. The Lord comes down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And he says within himself, says, come, let us go down and there confuse their language. So the Lord scattered them abroad over the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, or confusion. Now, this is God-ordained division. They moved out from there because they could no longer understand each other well enough in order to get along, to stay together, to maintain one city, one tower, one way to heaven. This is the beginning of false religion and men trying to unite so they do not obey the command of God, which was to scatter abroad over the face of the whole earth. That is what God had told Noah and his family. We already recognize that the book of Revelation is out of sequence. We also find that when we come to the book of Genesis, it is out of sequence because the events in chapter 11 actually occur before the events of Genesis chapter 10. But those are the next set of verses we're going to look at. Genesis chapter 10. Genesis chapter 10 tells us how is it that the earth was divided up into nations, different people groups. Well, it happened in chapter 11 when God confused the languages. Chapter 10 gives us the results of that scattering. Now, Genesis 10, 8 through 11 says, now Cush became the father of Nimrod. He became a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. He's not one who's walking with the Lord. He's just simply one who is before the Lord, meaning he can be observed by the Lord, but he's certainly not a worshiper of the Lord. He's not like Noah or Enoch who walked with the Lord, who honored God. This Nimrod is one who does not honor God, and he's described as a mighty one. it says here that the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. That's the same Babel we just read about above in chapter 11. And that's the beginning of Nimrod's kingdom, who's the son of Cush. Who, by the way, Cush is the son of Ham. Ham is the son of Noah. And, of course, Noah was defiled by Ham because Noah got drunk after getting off the ark. Noah himself got trapped in a sin, but Ham simply magnified that sin. Noah doesn't directly curse Ham. He curses his son, Cush. And Cush is in a curse line now, and from this line comes Nimrod, and Nimrod decides to build the kingdom of Babel in the land of Shinar, which is Babylon. And from that land, he went forth into Assyria and built Nineveh, the great city. Now, why would he leave Shinar and leave Babel and go to Assyria and build a city there called Nineveh? Because when languages were confused at the Tower of Babel, Nimrod no longer had people who could understand him to follow his orders, and therefore he was one of those who took the group of people who understood him and went off to a different place. And went off and built a city, a kingdom and a city that became very powerful. Nineveh, in fact, was the most powerful city in the ancient world until Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon came along and destroyed him in 600 B.C., But Nimrod is the founder of Babylon. He's the founder of the great city. And at this point, we're going to stop and break off until next time and pick up again more events in chapter 17. And we'll find out what kind of a religion really was started in Babylon. When it says in chapter 17 of Revelation that John sees this woman riding on a beast who is Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth, and we'll see that Babylon, as built by Nimrod, is where all religion started. Religion in the sense of a work system devised by man to find a way to get to heaven, to be delivered totally apart from the living God and the truth of God. And that's what we'll look at next time.